Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. We are reaching the conclusion of the teachings of Dad Bharat, who was previously Bharata Maharaj, to Maharaj Rahugana. We're in chapter 13 and it goes on to 14. If Krishna allows, we will finish chapter 13 today. Way back in chapter 12, after the initial instructing of Rahugana, of Maharaj Rahugana by Jad Bharat, because Jad Bharat was forced to carry the palanquin of the king. And Jad Bharat was an exalted person. And the result was that he couldn't carry it properly because he was fully nonviolent. He refused to step on ants. And in that way he was causing trouble for the smooth carrying of the palanquin. And he was chastised very, very strongly, threatened by Maharaj Rahugana. But Jad Bharat then decided to preach to him, and practically, as we've seen, this was the first time he actually revealed his position as an exalted person. And he preached to him very strongly, but philosophically. He preached to him philosophically that this material world is a dream. In what sense is it a dream? It is a dream in the sense that everything, all that occurs in the material world is temporary. Just as in a dream, we may have so many wonderful experiences or so many horrible experiences, but in any case, they are temporary. We awaken and they're over. So similarly, all in the material world is temporary, like a dream. But Jad Bharat also preached that the desires that we carry within our minds, and there are so many of them, we cultivate these desires within our mind, and actually they are the cause of our repeated birth and death in the material world. And specifically, that the desires to enjoy, rather than causing enjoyment, they ultimately cause our suffering. So in that sense, because the mind is the carrier of these desires, the mind is truly the enemy, and it should be neglected. So he explained all these things quite philosophically. And when Maharaj Rahugana responded, his first response was stated in the 12th chapter, in the previous chapter, in the third text, and he said, these mysterious yoga instructions that you have given me, how we are not the body, that the body is doing, has no connection with the self, how the self, the soul, whom we are, it is neither fat nor thin, nor carrying anything, nor tired, no connection at all with the bodily activity. So he's saying that these instructions for self-realization that you've given me appear very difficult to understand. And he asks some questions. How is it that I'm not tired when my body is tired, because I am the person and I'm experiencing the sensation of tiredness? So how is it that there's no connection between what is going on with my body and me? So he says, this is very difficult for me to understand, the instructions that you've given. So please repeat them in a simple way so that I can understand them. My mind is very inquisitive. I want to know, and I want to understand this clearly. So then, in the 13th chapter, Jatabharat begins to tell him in the process of explaining it again. He's explaining it very clearly, simply. But through an analogy. And the analogy will be explained in the 14th chapter. The story that he's telling will be explained in the 13th chapter, the analogy in the 14th chapter, but the explanations of the analogy from the 14th chapter included in the purports of the 13th chapter, actually. So we're getting it revealed to us as we hear it. So he tells a story of the living entity, or an analogy, a metaphorical story, that the living entity is in the material world, wandering from one species of life to the next, experiencing repeated birth and death, etc. And his activities are very much like a merchant. And a merchant, maybe he will go to the forest sometimes to find something. And even nowadays, even in Perth, this is done. That someone, sometimes in the government forest, there's firewood. And if you get a little bit of a license, an inexpensive license, you can go and collect firewood as much as you can take away, because they've felled the trees. To sell the trees, they felled the trees, and the tops of the trees are just left there, and they want the land cleared, so they allow people to come and just take as much as they want away. So people do come and take it away, and then they chop it up and they sell it. So a person who has no business or no land, he can go to the forest and pick up something fairly easily, and then come out and sell it. So this is compared to a materialistic man, or a materialistic man who does this, is compared to the spirit soul, who enters, the spirit soul enters the material world with a mood to enjoy it, to get something out of it, in a similar way to the merchant entering the forest. He wants to get something so he can exploit it. Exploit it means use it for his own purposes. But there's always, sometimes people in this world will come to us and say, I have a plan how you can make a lot of money very easily. All you have to do is this, 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 and this. It's so simple. But then, more or less inevitably, what happens is you get entangled. If you go for that plan, you get entangled in it. And there's so much disturbance that comes, so much difficulty that comes, and very, very often you end up losing everything, or to speak of gaining. So this is what happens to the materialistic person when he enters the forest, or the soul, the materialistic or selfish soul who has an independent desire. When he enters the forest of material enjoyment, trying to enjoy, exploit something, what happens? He meets so much difficulty. So we've read in the previous class, we've read the first 13 verses, which describe some of the difficulties that he finds, even though he's not looking for difficulty at all. He's looking for what? He's looking for happiness. Simply happiness. Easy happiness. But no, the merchant finds hills, and in going up and down the hills without his shoes, he steps on thorns and rocks and suffers so much. There's crickets that give his ears trouble. There are plunderers who steal everything. He has to go through thorny thickets. He suffers. And then he comes back and brings back his goods from his hard-earned money, and his family members take it all. And sometimes he's so thirsty, and he sees a mirage of some water somewhere, and he goes searching for it and gets into more difficulty. And he's trying to enjoy female association, gets into so much more difficulty. The plan, the promise of enjoyment is always there. But instead of the promise being fulfilled, just the reverse happens. A little bit of pleasure, possibly, and a lot of difficulty. Plenty of suffering. Sometimes he becomes swallowed by a python. What is the python compared to? Anyone know?
Time?
No. Sleep. Overwhelmed and crushed by the python of sleep. Swallowed by it. So, these chapters, these verses, and the next chapter, oh, they paint a very dark picture of the attempt to enjoy in the material world. They don't tell of the positive alternative, the positive solution of the sweetness of love for Krishna. But rather they tell of all the miseries that come due to our attempts to enjoy in the material world. So much misery. There's always such a nice plan there. Oh, I'm going to do this and it's just going to work like this and like that. But as long as we are the center of our plans, as long as the center is to please ourselves, we are entering the forest of material enjoyment, and instead of getting material enjoyment, well, we'll hear what we get. So, the next, I think it's four more classes. One, two, three, yes, four more classes. We'll have to walk through the forest of material enjoyment and achieve one type of suffering after the next. And each time we hear about a specific type of suffering, what should happen? We should think, oh, I don't want to go through that one. I don't want to go through that one again. Let me learn my lesson. Let me don't walk into this trap. In fact, let me not walk into the material forest at all. Let me keep far away from it. So in this way, detachment, vairagya, should develop within the heart. Vairagya means detachment. So text 14, as he's walking, there's the merchant-like person, that soul desiring to enjoy in the material world. He's walking into the forest. And Jad Bharat says to Rahugana, my dear king, this is text 14. On the forest path of material life, first the person is bereft of his father and mother. Why is he bereft of his father and mother? Because everyone is naturally, it's very unnatural not to have great loving affection for one's father and mother. And then what happens? One grows older, and as we grow older, our parents grow older. And our parents are growing older at the same rate that we're growing older, but they have a head start on us. So when we are older, they are old. And then the inevitable occurs, they die. And then one feels shelterless. Because they have protected us ever since we were protectionless babies, children. We had no one to protect us, and our parents took care of us, and then they leave this world. We think, who will take care of me now? There's an emptiness in the heart. So first a person is bereft of his father and mother, and after their death, he becomes attached to his newly born children. So he transfers all that attachment and love and affection to his own children and takes shelter of them in that way, as if they will give him protection. In this way, He wanders on the path of material progress and is eventually embarrassed. Why are we embarrassed? Because we have so many plans for ourselves, our family, our children. No one ever plans for their parents to die. Everyone has a dream, what we wish our children to grow into. But we become so embarrassed when they don't perform according to our desire. Our own careers crash at times. We're discovered to be incompetent or cheating or angry or this or that. So embarrassing. Nonetheless, despite the fact that our material plans do not work, no one knows how to get out of this. Even up to the moment of death, we try harder and harder and harder. So people forget when the parents die, instead of thinking, oh, I'm going to die, people forget. And they transfer that same attachment to their children, forgetting that the purpose of life is jnana, knowledge, sattvam sanjayate jnanam, knowledge that we are eternal souls, and knowledge that we should not become attached to the things of the material world. 15. There were and are many political and social heroes who have conquered enemies of equal power. There's nothing heroic about conquering someone who's tiny and insignificant or less powerful than ourselves. But if we conquer someone equal or greater than us, then we are heroes. So there were and are many political and social heroes who have conquered enemies of equal power, yet, due to their ignorance and believing that the land is theirs, they fight one another and lay down their lives in battle. They are not able to take up the spiritual path accepted by those in the renounced order. Although they are big heroes and political leaders, they cannot take to the path of spiritual realization. So everyone falls into this trap, even the heroes and leaders. Because naturally, we follow the leaders. It's natural, it's unavoidable. We follow the heroes. But the heroes and the leaders, they do not lead us properly. Because they become enamored by materialistic life. They fight, they are so heroic. They die completely attached to material life, to the land, to the country, to the family, to their wealth, whatever. So ignorant, actually ignorant. Sometimes the living entity, and then what happens to them, if they are really wonderful, they name a street after them, something like that. Or in Perth, they have trees and they put a plaque next to the tree. You're a hero, but what is the use of being a dead hero? If you've died for a cause that's more or less just fleeting, temporary. Or if you're really, really, really a powerful, glorious hero, they put up a statue somewhere of you. But then, where is that you actually at that point? You're gone. You're in another body. When people look at the statue and say, remember and say, how wonderful, how much good does that do you? Sometimes the living entity in the forest of material existence takes shelter of creepers and desires to hear the chirping of the birds in those creepers. Being afraid of roaring lions in the forest, he makes friends with cranes, herons, and vultures. Here's some of Prabhupada's purport. In the forest of the material world, there are many animals and birds, trees and creepers. Sometimes the living entity wants to take shelter of the creepers. In other words, he wants to be happy by being embraced by the creeper-like arms of his wife. Within the creepers, there are many chirping birds. This indicates that he wants to satisfy himself by hearing the sweet voice of his wife. In old age, however, he sometimes becomes afraid of imminent death, which is compared to a roaring lion. When a lion roars, one becomes terrified. The natural inherent power, the shakti of a lion, is very great, and it pierces the heart, and one becomes frightened. And that is compared to death. So to save himself from the lion's attack, he takes shelter of some bogus swamis, yogis, incarnations, pretenders, and cheaters. Being misled by the illusory energy in this way, he spoils his life. It is said, Harim vinam ritim nataranti. No one can be saved from the imminent danger of death without taking shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The word Hari indicates the lion as well as the Supreme Lord. To be saved from the hands of Hari, the lion of death, one must take shelter of the Supreme Hari, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We shouldn't take shelter of the creepers or the chirping birds. Text 17. Being cheated by them, the living entity, so that the cranes and herons and vultures are the false religionists who promise relief from death but cannot deliver it. Being cheated by them, the living entity in the forest of the material world tries to give up the association of these so-called yogis, swamis, and incarnation and come to the association of real devotees. But due to misfortune, he cannot follow the instructions of the spiritual master or advanced devotees. Therefore, he gives up their company and again returns to the association of monkeys who are simply interested in sense gratification and women. He derives satisfaction by associating with sense gratifiers and enjoying sex and intoxication. In this way, he spoils his life simply by indulging in sex and intoxication. Looking into the faces of other sense gratifiers, he becomes forgetful and thus approaches death. Prabhupada's purport. Sometimes a foolish person becomes disgusted with bad association and comes to the association of devotees and brahmanas and takes initiation from a spiritual master. As advised by the spiritual master, he tries to follow the regulative principles. But due to misfortune, he cannot follow the instructions of the spiritual master. He therefore gives up the company of devotees and goes to associate with simian people who are simply interested in sex and intoxication. What does simian mean? Monkey? Yes, monkey-like persons. So this is what happens when one comes in the association of devotees, even takes initiation, then he's asked to follow the rules, no illicit sex, no intoxication, no meat eating, no gambling, and he can't do it. So what happens usually? Instead of thinking, oh, I am a fallen soul and becoming very, very humble and continuously trying, instead of that, or taking a humble position, instead of that, he'll leave the association of devotees. This is a typical psychological reaction. Because no one likes to feel inferior within his group. But what happens if we are inferior? Instead of becoming humble and learning, what do? We change our group. That's the first reaction usually. To another group who has lesser standards, lesser values, and we are just like them, and we can look at their faces and we can see people just like us. And then the next thing that happens after changing the group, what do we have to do? Everyone knows. If we can't come up to the standard of one group and we move to another group that has a lesser standard, what do we have to do?
Drop our standard.
Yeah, we've already dropped our standard and we're associating with people of a lower standard. What's the next thing we have to do?
Be the top of that group.
Well, even before we attempt to do that, what do we have to do? We have to criticize the other group immediately. Oh, these people, blah, 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 blah. And they're like this, and they're like this. Have to do that, practically speaking, because that covers up the fact that we haven't been able to succeed in anything but become humble. So that's all their fault, and blah, blah, blah. Even though there may be some fault, we have our faults, and that we won't want to see. So he gives up the company of devotees and goes to associate with simian people, monkey-like people, who are simply interested in sex and intoxication. Those who are so-called spiritualists are compared to monkeys. Outwardly, why are they compared to monkeys? Outwardly, monkeys sometimes resemble sadhus, because in the olden days, the sadhu would live practically naked in the forest, possessing nothing, living on just fruits and berries and roots. So outwardly, monkeys sometimes resemble sadhus, externally, because they live naked in the forest and they pick fruits. But they're not at all sadhus. Their only desire is to keep many female monkeys and enjoy sex life. Sometimes so-called spiritualists seeking a spiritual life come to associate with Krishna conscious devotees, Prabhupada says. But they cannot execute the regulative principles or follow the path of spiritual life. Consequently, they leave the association of devotees and go to associate with sense gratifiers who are compared to monkeys. Again, they revive their sex and intoxication, and looking at one another's faces, they are thus satisfied. In this way, they pass their lives up to the point of death. 18. When the living entity becomes exactly like a monkey jumping from one branch to another, what does that mean? Why is a monkey thought as foolish or criticized by saying he jumps from one branch to another? Why? Huh? He's just passionate, he's just acting, and he's jumping from one branch of the tree to another. Does it have any meaning? Does it have any significance? It's just a monkey, up to his monkey business. Sometimes the monkeys, they'll grab a tree, the young ones, they'll grab a tree and shake it and just show their strength, and then they have a funny way of when they're young, they have so much energy and strength, they bounce. They go boing, boing, boing. It's quite amazing. But it's meaningless, insignificant. It's just monkeys up to monkey business. So he jumps from one branch to another. He remains in the tree of household of life without any profit but sex. So his jumping, there's no gain for anyone. Thus he is kicked by his wife, just like the hiyas. Unable to gain release, he remains helplessly in that position. Sometimes he falls victim to an incurable disease, which is like falling into a mountain cave. What happens when one falls into a deep mountain cave, all alone in a great mountain? He becomes afraid of death, which is like the elephant in the back of that cave, and he remains stranded, grasping at the twigs and branches of a creeper. He can't get out. So very dangerous circumstances, dangerous, painful circumstances are described. O killer of enemies, Maharaj Rahugana, if the conditioned soul somehow or another gets out of his dangerous position, he again returns to his home to enjoy sex life, for that is the way of attachment. Thus, under the spell of the Lord's material energy, he continues to loiter in the forest of material existence. He does not discover his real interest, even at the point of death. No one understands the purpose of material life. We enter into the forest of enjoyment, trying to enjoy the situation and that, and we're put into great danger. Sometimes we die, sometimes we escape, and when we escape, we come back home, enjoy, and then go back into the forest. Not understanding that I came this close to death. Now how should I use my life? How should I use my life? What is the purpose of life? That inquiry separates us from the simian species, the monkeys. Nate vidu svatagatim hi vishnu. They do not know, we do not know, the actual purpose of life is to attain shelter at the lotus feet of Vishnu, of Krishna. Durasaya ye bharyanda manina andaya tandai upaniyamanas te pita tantram urudham nivada. Just the blind following the blind. We don't have vision and we follow those also who don't have vision. And therefore, the fate is very poor. My dear King Rahugana, text 20, you are also a victim of the external energy being situated on the path of attraction to material pleasure. So he chastises him strongly. So that you may become an equal friend to all living entities, I now advise you, the sadhu is going to give him advice to the king. I advise you to give up your kingly position. You renounce. And the rod by which you chastise, punish criminals. Give up attraction to the sense objects and take up the sword of knowledge, sharpened by devotional service. Take up the sword of knowledge, sharpened by devotional service. And what should one do with that? Then you will be able to cut the hard knot of illusory energy. And what is that hard knot? Attachment to the material world for the purpose of enjoyment. The whole trip to the forest of material energy is to enjoy. The false ego is the central identity of every conditioned soul. And the false ego means, I am the enjoyer. Ishvara ham aham bhogi siddham balavan sukhi. Then with the sword of knowledge sharpened, cutting the hard knot of illusory energy, cross to the other side of the ocean of nescience. Now here is what Rahugana replies. The king said, text 21, this birth as a human being is the best of all. Even birth amongst the demigods and the heavenly planets is not as glorious as birth as a human being on this earth. But how many of us would rather be demigods on the heavenly planets? Where life is a lot more pleasant. But he's saying it's better to be on earth. Because of the suffering. The suffering kicks us, reminds us that material life, material birth, material existence is not for us. He says, what is the use of the exalted position of a demigod? In the heavenly planets, due to profuse material comforts, there is no possibility of associating with devotees. So he's saying the value of human life is specifically that one can associate with devotees. And the result of associating with devotees, as Bharat Maharaj has said when he's asked, when he was asked previously, how can one make an advancement? He said that one has to smear himself with the dust of the feet of the devotees. This is how they make advance. One has to serve devotees who are very fixed in Krishna consciousness and who love Krishna. And by that service, Krishna is pleased. And by that service, one advances. So this is the great fortune of human life, he explains. So what is the use of even being in the heavenly planets if there is no facility to associate amongst the devotees and in the association of devotees? What must occur is Krishna Katha. This is the purpose of association of devotees. Tandera. Gautama Das Thakur says, Tandera Charana Sevi Bhakta Sanevas. Even birth after birth. Janame janame hoy eya. This is my desire, eya vila, to associate, live in the association of devotees. It is not wonderful, Rahugana says, is it not at all wonderful that simply by being covered by the dust of your lotus feet, one immediately attains the platform of pure devotional service to Adhokshaja, which is not available even to great demigods like Brahma? By associating with you just for a moment, I am now freed from all arguments, false prestige, because he's the king, and lack of discrimination, which are the roots of all entanglement in the material world. Now, by your association, he says, I am free from all those problems. This is wonderful, because these things bind us so deeply in the material world. We are trapped by these things, our pride, our false arguments, our pride, false prestige, and our lack of discrimination. So by his association with Jadbharati, he is freed from these things, all of them. And for a king who really has something to be proud of, so amazing. So how powerful is this association? He continues saying, I offer my respectful obeisances unto the great personalities, whether they walk on the earth's surface as children, young boys, avadutas, or great brahmanas, even if they are hidden under different guises, I offer my respects to all of them. By their mercy, may there be good fortune in the royal dynasties that are always offending them. So he was showing, he was saying himself that the kings, due to their natural pride, because a king, a kshatriya, he needs pride to do his service. If someone challenges him or offends him, he has to be ready to fight to the death. If someone hurts one of the citizens, he has to be ready. How dare you do this in my presence? He has to have that type of pride. So that is positive for him to have that. But the negative side of that positive is that he may tend to offend great personalities, exalted sages who maybe are in disguise. So he asks that the sages be merciful, because he's seen that he's done this himself. The Prabhupada explains on the last line of the purport, one should be very careful not to offend the lotus feet of Vaishnavas and Brahmanas. 24. Now Sukadeva Goswami, who's narrating this to this discussion between Rahugana Maharaj and Jadbharat, because he's describing the pastimes of the descendants of Priyavrata, and Bharat Maharaj is the son. Bharat Maharaj was the son of Maharaj Rishabdev, who was a descendant of Priyavrata. And in his second birth from being Bharat Maharaj, he was Jadabharat. So this is all in that story. So Sukadeva Goswami, who is narrating this to Prickett Maharaj, said, my dear king, O son of Mother Uttar, there were some waves of dissatisfaction in the mind of Judd Bharat due to his being insulted by King Rahugana. This was previously, because Rahugana forced him to carry the chariot, who made him carry his palanquin. But Judd Bharat neglected this. So this shows that sometimes that we become angry in our hearts, sometimes we become envious, sometimes this emotion comes, sometimes some pride comes. So even Judd Bharat felt this. He felt some dissatisfaction towards Rahugana. But when this occurred in his mind, he neglected it. He neglected these false emotions because he was fixed. False emotions means that they were really there in his mind. They were really there, and there were real causes for them to be there, but he didn't identify with them because he understood himself an eternal soul, having nothing to do with this material world. So Judd Bharat neglected this, and his heart again became calm and quiet like an ocean. Although King Rahugana had insulted him, he was a great Paramhamsa. Being a Vaishnava, he was naturally very kind-hearted, and therefore he told the king about the constitutional position of the soul. He then forgot the insult because King Rahugana pitifully begged pardon at his lotus feet. After this, he began to wander all over the earth just as before. Prabhupada explains in his purport, it is the duty of everyone desiring to return to Godhead to become submissive like King Rahugana and beg pardon of Vaishnavas one may have offended. Vaishnavas are generally very kind-hearted. Therefore, if one immediately submits himself at the lotus feet of a Vaishnava, one is immediately cleared of offensive reactions. If one does not do so, the reactions will remain and the result will not be very palatable. After receiving lessons from the great devotee Judd Bharat, King Rahugana of the state of Sovir became completely aware of the constitutional position of the soul. He thus gave up the bodily conception completely. My dear king, whoever takes shelter of the servant of the servants of the Lord is certainly glorified because he can, without difficulty, give up the bodily conception. Prabhupada's purport. As stated in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Saru Sangha Saru Sangha Sarva Shastra Kai Lava Matra Saru Sangha Sarva Siddhi Hai. It is a fact that if one takes shelter of a pure devotee, one attains all perfection, even if the association is a short one. A Saru is a pure devotee of the Lord. It has been our practical experience that the first instruction of our spiritual master infused us with Krishna consciousness, so that now we are at least on the path of Krishna consciousness and can understand the philosophy. So Prabhupada is speaking very, very humbly of his own situation. At least now, after being infused with Krishna consciousness by our spiritual master, we are at least on the path and can understand the philosophy. And the result of that, there are many devotees engaged in this Krishna consciousness movement as a result. The whole world is revolving under the bodily conception. Therefore, there must be devotees all over the world to deliver people from the false bodily conception and fully engage them in Krishna consciousness. So much of the preaching is just this, to break the false bodily conception. And if we preach to others enough about this, it also helps us very much. We are not the body, we are not this body, we are not the youthful body, we are not the old man's body, we are not the old lady's body, we are not dog bodies or cat bodies. We're eternal. We are souls, and our happiness is truly, if we wish truly to be happy, on that level. So Prabhupada here says there is a great need for people to realize this and preach this Because why is there a need in the world that this be preached? Because there is so much suffering in the world, because this bodily conception carries one into the forest of material enjoyment, which is great, great, great suffering. So Prabhupada compassionately wishes the devotees of the Krishna Consciousness Movement to preach, to help others, to realize something and help others. Because there is such a great need in the world. Text 26. King Prickett then told Sukadev Goswami, "My dear Lord, O great devotee sage, you are omniscient." What does omniscient mean? No. What does all knowing mean? Yes. Knowing all, knowing everything. You have very nicely described the position of the conditioned soul, who is compared to a merchant in the forest. From these instructions, intelligent men can understand that the senses of a person and the bodily conception are like rogues and thieves in the forest, because they steal away our life. The senses steal away our life. All our time engaged working for the senses, and we are not the body, we are not the senses. And what, so the like rogues and thieves in that forest, and one's wife and children are like jackals and other ferocious animals, because they plunder that which one has worked so hard to obtain. They plunder one's life, a materialistic family members. They plunder one's life. One works so hard and they take everything for their enjoyment. They are like jackals and other ferocious animals. However, it is not easy for the unintelligent to understand the purport of this story, because it is difficult to extricate the exact meaning from the allegory, but we didn't have any difficulty because Prabhupada's purports revealed the meaning as Judd Bharat said it. "I therefore," Sukadev Goswami, he's Prickett Maharaj is requesting, "I therefore request your holiness to give the direct meaning," because he didn't have the purports that we had. So in the next chapter, which will complete this section, it's entitled The Forest of Enjoyment. So it's 45 verses. The purports are quite strong. Maybe 46 verses. So we'll see if we can finish those in 3 classes. And we'll hear more about the same points gone over again. How the forest of material enjoyment, how it causes suffering if we enter into that forest thinking that we're our body, thinking that our business is to enjoy life, trying so hard to enjoy but ending up in so much misery, inevitably ending up in misery. Okay, so we'll continue, should Krishna allow us to continue tomorrow. Okay, thank you very much. Si Jad Bharat ki jai. Si Sukadev Goswami Maharaj Prickett ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaur Bhaktivinoda ki jai.